Wanted to thank Marie for welcoming me here today and for inviting me to come speak, and also to share my gratitude for you for being the best travel companion one could have. So thank you. Marie asked me if I'd be willing to share with you all about how I center and prepare myself to take action. And I have to say, I'm more used to talking about why I take action, what's important to me. And so this will be my challenge. And she gave me 5 minutes to do it. And so, my mother was the RE director of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Rockford, Illinois, for my entire growing up. And she used to say to me, "Do what you're called to do, whatever needs to be done. You may never see the results of your labor in your lifetime, but do it anyway." Finding what needed to be done was never hard. It's still not hard, is it? But learning about the pitfalls of urgency and how to find my rightful place in doing it was and continues to be much harder. How do I prepare myself for service, for having a clear voice? How do I know that I'm taking right action? It's clear to me that the means must match the ends. That to co-create Martin Luther King's beloved community, we must co-create. Then we must learn to do it in new ways, in a process that is consistent with the dream. So far, I can think of 6 practices, many of them Quaker, that help me center and help guide me. The first is listening well to the light, or that of God within me. And I'll talk a little bit more about each of these in a minute. The second, using Quaker practices of queries for self-reflection. The third is doing my own homework, learning enough on my own so that I don't burden others to teach me. Fourth is building authentic relationships with the people most impacted by injustice. The fifth is standing down my own need to have that good idea, to lead, to take over, and instead learning my rightful place. And lastly, engaging in honest, soul-searching, and iterative, ongoing evaluation, paired most of the time with a willingness to learn and change. A few weeks ago, I joined you all in your service about silence. As a Quaker, stilling my mind, sitting in expectant waiting, allows me to listen for that still small voice inside of me, and to listen for clarity and for a way to open. As Quakers, we often use queries or questions to help us reflect more deeply on our lives. And I wanted to, this was one of the signs we brought with us to Texas last week. Am I living the life I am called to live? And in this case, a collective query, who are we if we do not share in one another's burdens? What kind of country do I want to live in? Sometimes I will carry a query with me for a week or maybe longer, and my query for today is, what part do I have to play in this? Doing my own homework, especially if I want to work with communities that are not my own, is really important. When I teach, and some of you have heard me say this, I think, I'm looking at you, Jennifer. I say, my need to know does not equal someone else's need to teach me. The good news is there are so many people willing to tell their stories through blogs, through TED Talks, even one-on-one. My job is to listen and believe those stories. Once I've done and continue to do my own homework, I'm perhaps more ready to engage in deeper, mutually meaningful relationships. This takes time and can feel like it's in direct conflict with my overwhelming urgency to do something. Yet building real relationships, especially cross-cultural relationships, is exactly what co-creating the beloved community is all about. For me, urgency, especially my white urgency, outside of real relationships, risks perpetuating oppression and white supremacy in our social justice movements. The urgency is real. But it's also fraught with missteps and real potential for harm. Slowing down to build authentic relationships is some of the most important work we all could be doing. I love this image. Imagine where the power is in this slide. She definitely doesn't need me in front of her or even alongside. Probably not even behind her. My rightful place might be in the basement in a nearby church, keeping her children safe while she leads this movement. Finding my rightful place, learning to follow the leadership of others, standing down my own supremacy, of all the things I do to prepare, this one challenges me the most. A few more queries that I carry with me to help me with this challenge, to help me stay in my center without centering myself. They are, what is my rightful place here in this moment? What can I learn from how I showed up so I can do better next time? Am I being transparent and accountable for my words and my actions? I will close with this slide. Thank you so much for including me in your service. Thank you, Marie.
Marie asked me to share our family's story about harboring today. In the spring of 2013, my husband Todd and I saw the future very clearly. My two children who lived with us were becoming adults and would soon leave the nest for their own journey. We were looking forward to a quiet house, more time for ourselves, and the opportunity to focus on our relationship. When we fell in love in 2004 in this building, we had four children between the ages of 9 and 16, so needless to say, we rarely had time for just the two of us. However, these plans were about to change radically. That spring of 2013, my daughter Liz was 18 and attending cosmetology school. She found that being an adult meant choosing what she did with her time, and it became more important to party and hang out with boys than to go to school. She was on a path of self-destruction, and we were at our wits' end. We suggested that she quit school, move out, and learn the hard way what being an adult was really like. We were getting to the end of our patience and support. And then she found out she was pregnant. The boy that was fun to hang out with suddenly wanted nothing to do with her. And she had some huge decisions to make. I supported all of her options and made sure she knew she had choices. I honestly did not think she would keep the baby, and I was afraid that if she did, that baby would be born into a bad situation. In the end, she decided to get her life together, stop partying, and finish school before the baby was due. I was proud of her, but I knew it would not be an easy road. 3 weeks after graduation, she gave birth to a beautiful baby boy named Felix. Many of you have seen him around here. Liz and I made a deal when Felix was born. Todd and I agreed to let her stay living with us, and we would help take care of Felix and offer financial support. In return, she would make Felix the priority in her life, get a job, and take responsibility for the two of them. At the time, we didn't know if any of us could live up to this arrangement, but we were all willing to try. The journey of the last 5 years was never easy for us. The house became crowded and our time became limited. When Liz got a job, it meant that Todd and I took care of Felix most nights and weekends while also working our own full-time jobs. Parenting in your 40s turned out to be a lot more effort than I thought it would be. We didn't always get along, and there were fights about money, who was watching Felix that night, and whose turn it was to do the dishes. It meant Todd and I saying no to many other opportunities. Over the years, many people asked us why we did it. Why not just push them out of the house? Make Liz see what it's like to be a true single parent. Don't you want your life back? Sometimes took the high ground and responded, well, of course, this is the right thing to do. But there were days that I had those same thoughts. We've already raised children and put in our time. Why should we be raising Felix? Why shouldn't we let Liz live on her own and get food stamps and housing and daycare assistance? Didn't we deserve our own freedom? But the reality was, we were getting as much from this deal as we were giving. Most grandparents don't get to spend as much time with their grandkids as we did with Felix. Most people don't get to learn from their own parenting mistakes and do better that second time around. And we were so lucky to have friends and a spiritual community that was always supportive. Being able to bring Felix here to the fellowship, just like a normal family, was a really wonderful and great joy. Seeing my daughter blossom into a loving parent and a successful adult has been the highlight of my life. Ultimately, this journey has been about love, the love for my child and then my grandchild, a love that wanted them to have a good start and be supported and have opportunities they otherwise would not. That love turned us into a multi-generational family. Liz came to us a few months ago and announced she was moving her and Felix to Madison for a new job. We were happy for them, finally getting to start their life on their own. And we're happy for us. The empty nest that we have dreamed about is happening. Our time to take care of them has ended, but the impact for all of us will always remain.
I am honored today to read what Katie Reiser wrote. Katie is a young woman that I've had the privilege of watching growing up here, and some would say we are now peers, but she's actually the teacher, and I'm the student. When we welcome people into our communities, we often welcome them into a space where the perceived ownership of the community is in the hands of those already here. But when we do that, we miss the opportunity to enter into a relationship with a new person as co-creators of a shared experience of community. By allowing ourselves to feel the loss of the way we had previously experienced our community, while simultaneously opening ourselves to the joy that comes with sharing culture and creating new community, we can experience a more full spectrum of what it means to be human. Existing to care for one another rather than relying on institutions that segregate and serve some while harming others. If our community is to be a harboring space for those of us in need, we must publicly declare our allegiance to one another and to those who are oppressed rather than to the systems and institutions that exist to oppress, including the government. As a sanctuary congregation, we have done this through public declaration and by preparing our space to offer sanctuary to someone whose safety is at risk. This is a necessary and requested action that we have taken. It is meaningful to those in our community who live with a deep fear and uncertainty every day. We may host someone here in Sanctuary, and if we do, we must be prepared for this community to change. We must prepare ourselves to feel the loss of the way we previously experienced it and the joy that of what it can become as we co-create community with someone who is willing to trust us. How do we make our larger community a harbor for those who have experienced deep, life-altering loss and trauma at the hands of oppressors, and for those who are not safe here because of unjust laws of this government? We need strong, unwavering allies. We need lots of them, and we need them everywhere. Today, I will share the wisdom of a leader of our community and an immigration justice activist, Norris Pina, reading from her work entitled, What We Need from an Ally, an Immigrant Perspective. I will be reading Norris's words, and truly, when I say the word you, I'm included in that. When I say the word us, I am not. That is the immigrant story. To be a good ally, you have to be vocal and active in your role as an ally. Allyship is pointless, ineffective, if no one knows about it. Being vocal in your role is what helps bring change. Wear your ally hat all the time. Standing in solidarity with those who are oppressed means providing support and meeting needs, but never taking over the narrative. We don't need allies to save us or speak for us, but to work with us. Human rights movements depend on allies. In order for immigrants to get their rights, other citizens need to come out as their supporters in order to create spaces for those affected. However, we have to have more than good intentions. Being an ally is all about justice, not about making the ally feel good. An ally needs to rise up to meet the need of a community. It is not about increasing your culture, knowledge, and capital. It is about disrupting beliefs and systems of oppression. Learn the correct terms for immigrants. Let's be consistent and brave on changing the narrative around the term illegal immigrant. I cringe every time I hear someone, but especially someone who should be an ally, refer to undocumented immigrants as illegal. Remember, no human being is illegal. If you really want to be an ally to immigrants, you have to know the appropriate ways to address us. Using the term illegal or alien to describe immigrants dehumanizes us and is a tool of xenophobia and oppression. Using a term like illegal creates distance from meaningful conversations about immigration and allows people to oversimplify a very human problem. When I ask you to be brave, we are asking you to speak up and correct those using those inappropriate terms. As an ally, you need to be informed. Can you answer these questions? How can we keep our immigrant friends safe? What makes an immigrant undocumented? What are the main concerns of the undocumented immigrants in your community? What resources do we have available to support our immigrants in this community? Asking immigrant communities for help is a great way to learn more about, but we are not responsible for teaching you. Build your own foundation of understanding first, do your own research, and be a well-informed ally. Think of intersectionality. Immigrant is just one part of a person's identity. Many immigrants also identify as LGBTQ, people of color, women, Muslim, and more. As a result, our experiences can vary greatly. Even though conversations around immigration in the U.S. often focus on Mexican immigrants and the Latino experience, a good ally needs to be conscious of these tendencies and consider the impact of intersectional identities in the fight for equality. Use your privilege. As an ally, you have a lot of privilege that both documented and undocumented immigrants do not have. It's important to use this privilege to provide spaces for them, helping to amplify their voices. When undocumented immigrants protest and lobby politicians, for example, they risk their lives and homes. As someone born in the U.S., or even a documented immigrant, you can do the same and risk much less. Allies are individuals who understand and acknowledge their access and privilege and use this, sometimes at a risk or a cost, to help end injustice.
Our reflections have been building on each other, helping us open our hearts little by little. We started by preparing ourselves to do this sacred work, then talked about harboring those we love, which is still not easy. Then our community neighbors, and now we are on to the true stranger. During much of the trip that Marijke and I took last week, I felt that I was of use. We were directly serving those who were left by ICE with nothing, by helping transport them and explain the difficult and complex transportation system that we have in this country. We handed out basic supplies like toothbrushes and deodorant, coats and hats, and we bought more supplies when they ran low. One day, I felt a lot of barriers to actually being helpful, and I felt very much in the way. Marijke was transporting a large family to the bus station, so I stayed at the hotel that was being used as a temporary shelter because all of the regular ones were full. I can't speak Spanish, so I couldn't talk with those hanging around the hotel without a translator, which were in very high demand already. I don't have medical skills. The crisis seemed so big in that moment that I felt overwhelmed. I wanted to save all these people myself. These are easy and understandable traps to fall into, and I felt myself slipping. I was also very aware that I was only there for a short time, and soon this crisis would feel very far away. Looking around, I saw many things that stopped me from just giving up to something too big that I could hardly touch. I saw a man playing with a young boy in the lobby of a hotel wearing shoes that Marijke had just donated 10 minutes prior. I saw the milk jugs that the boys used for goals while they played soccer. I saw the stack of pizza boxes someone had donated. I saw a man who had worn his best clothes and shoes all the way from Guatemala because the first thing he wanted to do when he got here was to get a job. I will never forget these images or these people. I will not be able to stop trying to help, especially in overturning the systems that are in place that created this crisis. We brought this woman and her son to the bus station. That backpack carried everything they owned. But everything in it was given to her by the kindness of strangers. Over the course of the 4 days that we helped at the hotel, donations poured in. We ourselves put a call out to our local friends and family, many who are in this room right now, and we were able to purchase many immediate needs as they popped up. This is harboring the stranger, the person who is from a different place and who looks different than I do, someone who speaks a different language but smiles the same, laughs the same, has many of the same basic needs that I do, including a safe place for harbor. We all may feel the same barriers that I spoke about, not knowing how to help, worrying that we will do more harm than good, which then means we may do nothing. My mantra recently has been this quote by Maya Angelou: "Do the best you can until you know better. Then, when you know better, do better." This helps me from falling into the trap of letting my emotions and guilt paralyze me from doing more action. It is our job to learn, to look to local groups who are doing the work and follow them. Our vision statement, the fellowship's vision statement, speaks to this beautifully when explaining the third part of our mission statement. Leading in social justice, we will have the courage to act, both individually and collectively, to build a more just and equitable world. We will have the wisdom to know when to lead and when to follow the lead of others. I will continue to learn more about this issue, and I invite you to join me. I will continue to call my representatives to demand that they work to change these systems, and I invite you to join me. I will continue to build relationships both here in the Fox Valley and farther away, and I invite you to join me. We can all harbor the stranger in our own way.